I don't have a coming out story. I have many of them. Here's one. Several years ago, Lawrence and I moved into the brand new house. My parents were planning to eventually retire in. Now, we were to oversee its completion from landscaping and furnishing. We were having some new windows put in by a very nice older gentleman named Fred. I introduced Lawrence as my partner. "Good to meet you, Warren," said Fred. "Lawrence," I corrected. "Sure," said Fred. "How do you like this window, Warren?" Okay, so Fred was hard of hearing, we figured. The next time Fred visited, he asked me if Warren would be there. "It's Lawrence," I said. "Yes," said Fred, "your brother, Warren." "Oh, no, he's not my brother," I said. He's my partner, my husband, Lawrence." Fred looked confused. "Yes, your cousin, Warren." "No," I said, "not my cousin." "No, I knew that wasn't right," Fred said. "Will your brother Warren be with us or not?" So I sighed and said, "Yeah, my brother Warren." For a while, Lawrence became laughingly known in my family as my brother Warren, suggesting the title of maybe a 70s sitcom with an equally ridiculous premise. It seemed easier to go along with Fred than to try to keep coming out. We talked with Fred a few more times while the windows were being made, and Lawrence stayed my brother Warren because it was easier. When it came time for the windows to be installed, Fred didn't come. Instead, he sent a son and daughter who brought their two adult children. "Are we going to meet your brother Warren?" they all asked. And at this point, it started being more awkward than fun. How to tell them that my brother Warren, who had been talking with their dad for weeks, was actually my partner, Lawrence. Coming out isn't easy, especially when you have to do it over and over again. And I find myself feeling like I'm coming out all over again this morning, here in this pulpit. The reasons for feeling that way are different than the ones that compelled me to sit down with my parents in a hotel room many years ago when they visited me at college and say the words I had held back for so long, but it's the same feelings. The feelings are similar even as I speak now, all these years later, married legally this month, like Paige and Shelley, for 10 years, not wanting to be judged solely for that part of my identity, not wanting it assumed that everything I do is somehow a result of that, not wanting to be considered a one-issue person or minister. And how to tell the story of my formative years? A story similar to so many of the LGBTQ people I know. The years of emotional, verbal, and even physical abuse by school peers. The social and cultural constrictions that sometimes starved my spirit and delivered to my soul the message that the world had no place for me in it. I don't want to sound like someone embracing victimhood. How can I tell the story of what that young person endured and still show you his spirit of resistance, his strength, despite his lack of knowledge and resources? Nowadays, it can sometimes be hard to imagine a world that had no or very little representation for LGBTQ people. Hard to imagine a television and movie landscape scrubbed clean of all remotely realistically depicted gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgender characters. Certainly a children's book like the one we read this morning, And Tango Makes Three, was unthinkable. Only very rarely did civilized discussion about this topic take place, as it was mostly relegated to the butt of jokes. But like others in this room, I remember that world. And it was a lonely one. So for me, coming out was a twofold process, because first you come out to yourself. You have to be honest about who you are. You have to be willing to be in touch with the realities of yourself. And this is the biggest step, I think, because whatever truth about ourselves we might be facing, sometimes it can be hard to accept. But this is important. On a theological level, the way we make meaning of our lives, it's essential. For no human being can be their best if they don't know themselves. The Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Puerto Rico writes, "Shame damages the human spirit. It attacks people at the deepest part of their being and convinces them that they are not worthy, not important, not good enough, not acceptable as they are. And that is in direct contradiction to what we as Unitarian Universalists hold to be true. Shame does not believe in the inherent worth and dignity of every person. In fact, shame destroys that dignity." So breaking away from shame, whoever we are, however we identify, it's necessary to living an authentic, dignified life. But it's not just an internal process. We can't be our authentic selves if we don't share our authentic selves. That took me many years to learn. And then to share that truth with other people, knowing some will reject you and others will not. 20 years ago, last week, October 6, 1998, Matthew Shepherd was left for dead, tied to a fence in Laramie, Wyoming. He was 21. He died 6 days later. The latest statistics from the FBI show 21% of hate crimes are still enacted based on sexual orientation. 40% of homeless youth, at least, this is hard to actually calculate and study, but 40% of homeless youth identify as LGBTQ. LGBTQ youth are 3 times more likely to try and commit suicide. So while the tragic, violent story of Matthew Shepherd may have happened 20 years ago, it behooves us to remember that the work is far from done. That breaking the bonds of shame takes time. And the progress we see here in our admittedly advantaged social location of Fullerton, California, is not the reality for many people. For many people, daily life as an LGBTQ person feels as dangerous as it did decades ago. And even still, in the best of circumstances, what comes with coming out in any way is its own kind of pressure. Now I have to be the best I can be to prove to people that these old stereotypes aren't true. Now I have to put aside all the hurts that have been sent all my way all those years so that people know I'm not bitter or broken. Now I have to stop talking about it so people know I'm just a regular person. And the process of coming out never really ends. Do I hold my spouse's hand as we walk through the parking lot? No. That might make someone anxious. Better not today. Tomorrow, we'll do that. Maybe. Today, we'll just walk side by side. Don't want to make anyone uncomfortable. Annette Marquis, the district president of the Unitarian Universalist Association, writes, "I make a conscious choice with everyone I meet whether or not I will come out to them. Do I have to change pronouns from she to he if I make small talk with the hairstylist about my upcoming wedding? Is it dangerous if my new neighbors find out I'm a lesbian? Coming out is never a one-time event. It is a daily practice. And it can be exhausting." I was thinking about that continuing process of coming out and how it's so true for so many of us, even in areas other than our sexual orientation. How do we speak the truths of who we are day in and day out? It gets tiresome having to explain to people over and over to speak of a hidden disability we might have, a political belief we might hold. It gets challenging to have to weigh every situation and consider the ramifications for bringing forward some truth about ourselves that might not be welcome. And yet, when we do, this is where we see a certain grace at play. When we do, we can sometimes be surprised by the response of other human beings. Levels of compassion, empathy, solidarity, and understanding can be ours to have, but we never know if we don't come out. And yet we have to acknowledge that coming out is always a risk. I know people who can't come out to others in their lives as Unitarian Universalists. People whose family members not only wouldn't understand and support our communal search for truth and meaning, but might also shun them for leaving the faith tradition of their family. I've known people who have to be quiet about their stance on reproductive rights, immigration, politics. I've even known people raised in a Unitarian Universalist congregation who had to come out to their very liberal parents as evangelical Christians. What did we do wrong? Those Unitarians. You did everything right, their kids said. You raised us to decide who we want to be, and this is who we are. We all face the experience of coming out at some point in our lives and going against the tide of familial and or cultural expectations, of stating our truths of identity. It's about acceptance of ourselves and integrity. But that continual process of coming out over and over can be wearisome. It's an individual's choice then to make when they want to decide whether it's worthwhile to come out. Whatever aspect of their self they might, and when it isn't worthwhile. When I went searching for a faith community and dragged Lawrence along, he was kind enough to go with me, but I wanted to find somewhere that accepted my relationship, my identity, but what I didn't expect was that it was openly spoken about in the Sunday service. The first morning we were there, the issue of marriage equality was discussed on the pulpit, and they knew we found a community that we could authentically be part of. They didn't just accept us in theory, but put that into spoken words and action even during the sacred time of Sunday services. We were at a point in our lives where we could not have been part of the faith community that did any less. It would have been inauthentic. I don't know what the future holds going forward, where we are right now as a country, as a world. The problem with any marginalized group is that once some victories are won, like marriage equality, it can feel like the work is done. In the last few years, gay and lesbian bookstores have closed all over California. Specifically, gay gathering places from West Hollywood to Laguna Beach are no more. Those who identify as LGBTQ are more inclined to live outside of what once were considered gay neighborhoods. We have fewer needs for those identity-based spaces because we are no longer considered social pariahs. We should be safe anywhere. But there is still so much work to be done. On Thursday, the U.S. Senate confirmed anti-gay lawyer Eric Dryband as head of the Department of Justice's Civil Rights Division. Dryband is in favor of enforcing North Carolina's House Bill 2, which prevents transgender individuals from using the restroom that coincides with their gender, as well as annuls ordinances that prohibits discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. Again, this is the person now in charge, as of Thursday, of the Department of Justice's Civil Rights Division. This is one of a long line of concerns we've seen under the current administration regarding LGBTQ issues, chipping away at the work that so many of the folks in this room participated in. Recent polls show that those who identify as LGBTQ feel much less safe today in the United States than they did just a few years ago. And undoubtedly, there are those in positions of power who see people like me and others in this room who identify somewhere on that spectrum as pawns to be used in waging political war by appealing to people's fears and religious-based prejudices. The work is not done. Far from it. The difference now is that, like the Me Too movement, I believe the conversation is unstoppable. The cat is out of the bag. There's no going back. Not without a big fight, anyway. I feel a lot of gratitude to be here to continue this fight, wherever it leads. When Lawrence and I sat down one day a few years ago, 2-3 years ago, we talked about the gay friends we came of age with, and we were startled by how many of them were dead. And we're not that old. At least I don't think so. Perhaps if circumstances had been different in my life, my story
would have been more like that of Matthew Shepard. That's a reality I'm aware of. And I know many of my LGBTQ friends understand that reality, even if we rarely speak of it. Somehow I never, for whatever reason, went down the self-destructive path I saw other LGBTQ-identified persons my age go down. And I was no more deserving of a long life than them. And I understand why they did what they did. Those old messages are hard to wipe out of your head. The feeling that you can never do enough, be good enough, it gets the better of people eventually. But those of us in this room are still here. And whoever we are, however we identify, we can continue the ongoing process of coming out as people of conscience, integrity, and resolve. It's an important process, worth the risks, for coming out in whatever way we choose to do so, and for whatever reason is the way we affirm ourselves and our values to the world. And we are called, right now, to affirm those things, to bring the best of what we can be to this world. This world, which can be such a wonderful world, needs authenticity, honesty, and the bravery of gentle, angry people now, perhaps more than ever.